I want to go back to the trapezoidal rule that we had and just do some very simple high school algebra. I showed you the formula that we use when we're integrating a little step with the trapezoidal rule, but let's see how we could argue that. So basically, what we can do here is that we assume that f of x in the interval here, let's take from 0 to h here, we approximate that simply by the first thing we can think of, which is just a straight line, right? Okay, so we know that the function, we know what values it have in well, 0 and h here, and this one would be f of 0, and this here would be f of h, right? So if I go over and look at this formula here, then it would seem that what I'm saying here is that b, that should probably be equal to f of 0. And then with a little bit of ingenuity, we can probably figure out that a here is f of h, and then minus f of 0, and then divided by h, all right? So then what we want to do is that we look at the integral from 0 to h of f of x dx, and basically what we said, well, I'm just going to substitute in my little approximation here. So it was from 0 to h of ax plus b dx. And that would then be 1 half a h squared here, and then plus bh. And then I can just go in and I can try to substitute in what these values are, right? I just determined a and I just determined b here. So this would be 1 half and then f of h minus f of 0 divided by h multiplied by h squared, and then plus f of 0 times h, and lo and behold, you can see when we put this together, then I get 1 half here, and then f of h plus f of 0 over h. Oh, sorry, no, this one will. This one has to be. Yes. So that was the formula that we used, and you probably used for the tutorial yesterday. So obviously, once we have approximated the function by a linear straight line, what do you think we're going to do next?
Curvy.
What?
Curved.
And what is the simplest curve you can think of? Yes. So once we do this, then, well, how about saying that f of x here, and I better follow my notation, it's alpha x squared plus beta x plus gamma. And once you've done that, then what we're going to see here is that this is another well-known formula, which is known by the name of Simpson's rule. And basically, all we have to figure out is how should we determine alpha, beta, and gamma. Here we had two constants, a and b, and I evaluate that the function in two points, f of 0, f of h. So probably here, since I have three constants, I would need two intervals. So I'm going to rig things here so that they come out nicely. I want to look at what this here could be, dx. So if I choose my intervals, so they're from minus h, then to 0, and then to plus h, then this integral here, that's very easy to do, right? Because the linear term here, that's going to cancel. So I would get 1 third alpha x cubed, and this I would get twice. And then I get plus 2 gamma, and then my x here is then, of course, now h, right? So that would be the integral that we would have. What we want to do is, we need to determine these coefficients, alpha, beta, and gamma. So how would we do that? Well, we can sort of do precisely what I did over here. If I look at f in minus h here, well, the first thing we want to say is perhaps that f of 0, that's probably going to be gamma, right? So we already know one of them. So if I look at f of minus h, then I have alpha h squared, and then minus beta h plus gamma. And then f of plus h here, it's alpha h squared plus beta h plus gamma. And then I can just solve for this. So it's perhaps not a big surprise that when I do this, then I see that alpha h squared, I can get that by basically adding f of h and then f of minus h, take the half of this, and then subtract off f of 0, right? Why is that not a big surprise? That's because I can put this on the same fraction. So it would be f of h here plus f of minus h minus 2 f of 0 divided by 2, right? So all we're saying is that my best attempt at looking at the second derivative of the function, given that I only know it in 3 points, that's what I'm going to call alpha h squared, right? The same thing here. If I look at beta h, I can get that by taking f of h here and then subtracting off f of minus h and then dividing by 2. You can see that if you remember yesterday when we talked about the first simple formulas for looking at derivatives, then this was the second derivative and this was the first derivative. So, of course, when I divide over by h squared and h respectively. So then I can do what I did here. I can just stick in these coefficients, and then we're going to see something that is somewhat surprising. So if I look at then the integral here from minus h to h of f of x dx, which I said was approximated by the integral that I wrote over here, so it's alpha x squared plus beta x plus gamma dx. Then we said that this was equal to 2 thirds alpha h cubed plus 2 gamma h. I have alpha h squared here, right? So this would be 2 thirds h, and then whatever is written over there. So that would be f of h plus f of minus h minus 2 f of 0 divided by 2, right? And then I need plus 2 f 0 times h. So it's fairly straightforward to just move this around a little bit. So what you get is h over 3 here. And then I can multiply this 2 in there, right? So what would I get? Well, it would seem that I would get an f of h here, right? And, well, actually, let's write it in the other order here. I would get minus f of minus h here. Where did my... But then I get here a plus 4 f of 0. And then I get a plus f of h, right? So when we develop this formula and assume that we actually integrating from a to b, then we can look at this, and then we can say that the integral from a to b of f of x dx, again, we're going to write it in the way we talked about yesterday. It's always going to be some sum here over the function evaluated in some points multiplied by some weights here. And again, I want to point out that xi here is probably a and then plus I times h, so they're evenly spaced. If we do this, then we see that, I'm going to have h of 3 f of a here, and then 4 times h over 3, and then f of a plus h. And then what's going to happen at the other end here is that I'm going to get an f of h there, but I'm also going to get an f of h from the interval after it, right? So I'll get something that's 2h over 3, and then f of a plus 2h. And then we go down to 4h, or up to 4h over 3, 2h over 3. And then the very last thing we're going to get is h over 3 f of b. In other words, our weights here, they're going to be h over 3, and then 2h over 3, then 4h over 3, then 2h over 3, and so forth. And then we end with 2h over 3, and then h over 3, right? And we have to have we can't just have any strange number of intervals. You can see here that we need an even number of intervals, but that's sort of a little...
consists of 2h over 3 and 4h over 3, right?
Yes. So that's what I was talking about yesterday, is that you can see as we, if we were to do a third order polynomial, likely it would have some period in between, but then we would have three coefficients that would be sort of distinguishable at the ends. So it's useful to look at these formulas here and can anybody tell me what the sum of the weights is going to be?
Have you written that down right? So the weights.
Maybe not.
Your first one goes like 1, 4, 2, 4, 2, 4, 2.
No, no, I called it incorrectly. You're right.
Yes.
And then, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be what's up. Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Yes. This, I'm just trying to write what we have here. What should the sum of the weights be? There are some rules here. No? No. Are there any functions that we can always integrate? What is the simplest function that you're... What?
Zero function. A constant.
Yeah, but not any constant. What is the constant that's the most constant of all constants?
One.
Now, one. Who said one, right? Let's integrate one. So I claim that all these integration formulas, they should at least be correct if I integrate one, right? So if we do this, then I claim that we should get n minus 1 times h from integrating f of x equal to 1 over n intervals. So we can go over and look at this one. Here I have, so I claim that this here should be, of course, I claim that I have two intervals. No. So this is not, n here is over n points. Right, sorry about that. Right. So the n here, that refers to the number of function evaluations that you're doing. So if we go over here, then we would say, well, we have three function evaluations. So here n is equal to 3. That would mean that if I'm integrating the function that is just 1, then I should get 2h here, which is given by this formula. And then what we would need to check is that h over 3 plus 4h over 3 plus h over 3, that's equal to 2h. And indeed, that does seem to be right. So somebody asked yesterday, well, suppose we get sloppy and put, for instance, a 2 here or a 2 there. I would claim that, you cannot then integrate the constant 1 correctly. And we probably want to do that, right? So this here is very simple. There's nothing really profound about that. But you can, sort of a nice little check that we can go in and we can see that things worked out nicely. The error term for Simpson, by the way, I think for the tutorial this afternoon you're going to do Simpson integration, but not just any Simpson integration. The error term here is, there's something known about it. I'm just going to tell you that it's h 5 over 90, and then the fourth derivative of some point in the interval. Right. So we can, people have succeeded in developing estimates for the error term. But if you go back and look at what we did for the trapezoidal, you can see that this here is much better than trapezoidal. So we did approximate the function by a straight line. We approximated it by a second order polynomial. What do you think we're going to do next? Yes. But then we would be here all afternoon. You probably don't want to do that. So the idea we could get is now we sort of say, well, I can integrate polynomials. So how about approximating f of x by some polynomial here, let's call it pn of x here, on the entire interval. Right. So if I've decided that I know the function, or I'm going to sample it, if you like, and I'm going to do that in some points here, then, and if this here is my interval from A and this here is to B, then I could say, well, I could sort of jump ahead and I could say, well, why not take a polynomial that will go through all these points? And well, to a certain sense, that's not entirely clear. I couldn't hope really to do better, because well, my knowledge of the function is only this, the sampling in these discrete points. And after all, if I take a smooth curve and put it straight through all these points, well, that would seem to be fairly good, right? So we want to see if we can figure out how to do what's called polynomial interpolation. And then sort of jump ahead and go way beyond Simpson here. The advantage here is, in this case, perhaps the xi are not evenly spaced. Actually, it's easy to imagine that you're confronted with some data that's coming out of something, and you want to integrate it, but you're only given some points, and if they're not equally spaced, you would be hard-pressed to get the trapezoidal or the Simpson's integration to work. So it would be interesting to be able to do something else. Let's look at polynomial interpolation. And then I'll likely do it in a form that is a little bit obscure. You'll soon see that you probably knew it already. That form, however, is very convenient for integrating. So suppose we know, the function in two points. Let's call them x0 and x1. And then we know what value the function has in these two points. Right? What would I do? Well, I would do precisely what I did for Simpson's integration. Well, I would say, well, probably we should take, the trapezoidal, we should take y0. And then we should look at the slope here, which would be that. And then I multiply that by x minus x0, right? So The important thing here is that this is, of course, exact in x0 and x1, right? Because there I just get y1 and y0. So more generally, suppose I know x0, x1, and then xn, y0, y1, and then yn. Then Lagrange came up with a neat way of figuring out what the polynomial is. And so what he does, this was actually done at roughly in an equivalent manner by Newton. So what we define is what's called cardinal functions. And what are these cardinal functions? Well, what we require is we call them Li. And what we require of them is that if I evaluate them in one of the points where the function is given, and again, I want to say that these may not be equidistant. That's going to turn out to be very important later on. Then we require that I either get a 0 or a 1. And that turns out that this is easy to do because we write them as a product that's very similar of what we have here. So I write them as a product over j equal to 0. But so let me see if I can get the indices right here. So this is the ith cardinal function, and it's a product over all j's. But j here cannot be equal to I. And so what we have in the numerator is x minus xi. And what we have in the denominator is xi minus xj. Right? If I put in xi here for x, sorry, it's wrong here. So it should be x minus xj. If I put in xi here, then you can see that the numerator and the denominator in all cases are just the same, and they're always different from 0. So it would mean that I would obviously get 1 here. On the other hand, if I put in and x here, which is equal to xj, then I get 0. So this form here obviously satisfies that. So if I then write so if we then look at Pn of x here, which is just a sum from I equals 0 to n of f of xi here, and then L of x, then you can see that this is a polynomial. And the order here is less than or equal to n. And if I look here at Pn of xi, well, if I go over and use this property, you can see that in this sum, it's only going to be, oh, sorry, so this here is the ith cardinal function. You can see it's only one of these cardinal functions that's going to give me a 1. So it's f of xi, and then li of xi, and this here's f of xi, right? So we have a polynomial. It is of the order n, and it goes through all the points that we desire. So I kind of this is neat because it's very easy to write this formula, and that's sort of why you define these what are called cardinal functions that way. So you can go through, and if you write down your values for x0, x1, and then y0 and y1, you can try to write out these cardinal functions. But I don't think I want to do that right now. Instead, I want to show you what this is good for, right? Because you could get many ideas now, right? So, and these goes under the general name of quadrature. So what we want to do, and this is one example of it, we look at the integral from f of x dx from a to b here. And then I'm going to say, well, as we discussed, the best I can do, that's to put a polynomial through these points. And we saw how we could do that by this simple formula. So it's going to be a sum here from 0 to n, and then f of xi. And then the integral from a to b of li of x dx, right? But these integrals we can, of course, determine beforehand. So this here would be a sum from 0 to n of f of xi and then ai. And you can see that we're back to our starting point. But here, there is no requirement that the points that we're summing over, they actually be equidistant. And they could be anything, for that matter. That would mean that AI here is then simply defined by the integral of the cardinal function. Right? So what this here would look like, right, it would be a0 and then f in x0 plus a1 f in x1 and so forth, an f in xn. Now, if you remember anything about orthogonal functions and so forth, you could probably get a number of ideas here where you would expand your function here on whatever you had available of fancy functions, and then figure out what these integrals would be. So the reason why we're discussing this in some detail is that if you start doing calculations, often you end up doing a lot of integrals. And you may be interested in finding the integral that's going to give you, or the numerical formulation that's going to give you the highest precision for the least amount of work. Obviously, if you look at the trapezoidal, Romberg, and today you're going to be looking at Simpson, if you have the time to spend, you can calculate to a very high precision. But sometimes that's, you just don't have that convenience, and you want to get the best precision that you can with the least least amount of work. So these shouldn't be taking too literal. It might depend a little bit on what you're looking at, but suppose you can only allow yourself to evaluate the function in 5 points. right? And in particular, you want to think about high-dimensional integrals. Then maybe you want to go this route. Let's see if we can do a little example here and see how it would what it would look like. So what what I would be interested in is the interval from minus 2 to 2. So that would be my integral or interval of integration. And then I want three nodes, as they're called, in minus 1, 0, and 1. OK, so I need my cardinal functions here. And I would start with the first one. So I need some pi here from j equal 1 to 2. If I number these nodes here, j equal to 0, 1, and 2, then I would be looking here at x minus xj here, and then x0 minus xj. And so you can just stick in, and I would get x here. And if j is equal to 1, then xj is 0. So I would get minus 1. Then this should be multiplied by then x minus 1, which would be when j is equal to 2 here, and then divided by minus 1, minus 1. So we know what these cardinal functions are. So this is 1 half x, x minus 1. And you can then go through, and we can evaluate also L1 here. Turns out to be minus x plus 1 times x minus 1. If I do L2 here, then this is 1 half x times x plus 1. And then we just need to integrate them. A0 here, it would be the integral from minus 2 to 2 of L0x here. Well, it's the integral from minus 2 to 2 of 1 half x times x minus 1 dx. And that is actually 8 thirds. And then A1 here, it turns out to be minus 4 thirds. And A2 here, again, comes out to be 8 thirds. So that means that I now have a simple formula from this. So I know that the integral from minus 2 to 2 of f of x dx, I have my three-point formula, if you like, a three-node formula here. I can just write that down. So it would be 8 over 3 f of minus 1, and then plus 4 thirds f of 0, and then plus 8 thirds f of 1. The important thing here that we want to know is that this is exact for all polynomials of degree less than or equal to 2. Right, because I have 3 points. So if it so happens that the functions that I'm integrating actually is a polynomial, then this recipe here will determine the exact polynomial. And then this here is going to be exact. So Yes.
What do you mean by node? Do you keep?
So, well, what I mean by node here, it's just the points that I've chosen on the x-axis where I evaluate the function. So here they're actually evenly spaced. So previously, that's what we called xi. It's nothing more than that.
There is a reason for calling them nodes, and I'll tell you about that right now. That's because you can get very clever here. Anyway, you can see that you can crank these out here, and you know, if you are confronted with a function that you know in some odd points xi, here you call them the nodes, and then you integrate up, and you get your own little custom-made integration formula, which you could hope is as good as it gets. I want to just tell you what Gaussian quadrature is. Then I'll show you where to go and look it up. So Gauss, he played around with this. Gauss did a lot of numerical work in his head, as a number of these guys were capable of doing. Some of them did prime number factorization as a hobby. Sounds incredibly painful. Pang will discuss some of this in chapter 6. What is the idea here? Well, the idea is that Gauss realized that if we choose the nodes in other words, the points where we evaluate the function cleverly, in a special way, and they're actually going to be chosen, so they're the zeros of a special function. Hence, we call them, hence the name nodes. Then we can get formulas that are exact up to polynomials. Of degree 2n plus 1. So let me write out the this little theorem here, and then we can discuss what it means here. So we want to take Q here of x to be a non-trivial polynomial, right? And we take it to be of degree n plus 1, right? Such that here the integral from a to b of any power multiplied by the polynomial here, dx, that's going to give me 0. And that should be the case for all powers from 0 to n. OK. And then let x0, x1 here up to xn be the zeros of q. You can see probably that this here is some kind of orthogonality restraint, and you can probably guess that your theory of orthogonal functions is going to come into play here. So what we're saying here is that we take such a polynomial that is orthogonal to all powers up to the maximum power of n. Then we choose the x0, so that would be our nodes here, not in any kind of way, but we choose them as the zeros of Q, right? So if we do that, then the integral from a to b of f of x dx, again, with our usual formulation, where the ai here is the integral from a to b of li of x dx here. This is exact for polynomials of degree less than or equal to 2n plus 1. So suddenly, before we looked at it, and I just cranked out a formula, and I didn't think about it, and I argued that that little formula with 3 points, it was going to be exact if my function was a polynomial of degree less than or equal to 2. But here, what Gauss figured out is that if you actually think a little bit about the points where you can evaluate, then you can get a much better precision in a certain sense, because it's going to be exact up to polynomials of degrees 2n plus 1. And that sounds totally contradictory, because we're just going to evaluate it in n plus 1 points, right? So how is this possible at all? Right, evaluating function in n plus 1 points, and it's going to be exact for polynomials up to 2n plus 1. And that's, of course, why this was figured out by Gauss and not just by anybody. I'll sort of sketch you a proof here. And so we assume here that f is a polynomial of degree 2n plus 1. Then what we're going to do here is I'm going to do a division by Q. So I write F here as P times Q plus R, right? And since Q here had degree n plus 1, then the degree of P, well, little p here, and the degree of R here, that cannot exceed n, right? So furthermore, here, when I look at f and I evaluate it in xi, then I'm going to get p in xi, and I'm going to get q in xi plus r in xi, right? But we go over here and we said that the points where I'm evaluating the function, they are chosen so that this here is equal to 0. So then let's try to integrate this. So we look at the integral from a to b here of f of x dx. But that would then be approximated by the integral from a to b here of p of x q of x and dx, and then plus the integral from a to b of r of x dx. But what is this integral here? This is, again, 0 due to that constraint. So in other words, we are saying that the integral of f of x is just the integral of r of x. But r of x here was of degree less than or equal to n. So this can be done exactly. Right? Hence, I actually boost the precision because this term here, it just drops out. And furthermore, the formula that we get is, of course, that we get some ai's and then r of xi here. But I just showed you that r of xi is equal to f of xi. So I just get a sum over ai and then multiply it by f of xi, which was precisely what I wrote over here. So this formula where I do just what I did before in my little three-node example, I can actually get it to work much better if I have the possibility of choosing the nodes explicitly. Are you tired of integration by now? Yes. Because I'm dividing by a polynomial of n plus 1, right? And I said that this was 2n plus 1, right?
You're dividing by 2?
Well, you know, I do polynomial division. So I'm dividing q into f, and that will determine p plus a remainder, which is r, right? So. Yes?
Is it always possible to do this? Because, you know, polynomials of degree n need not have any real root. So what is the basis of your grid?
Say that again.
Assuming that a polynomial of, we know that a polynomial of degree n has n nodes, but the n node need not be real. They have complex, you might have complex nodes.
Well, so what I hope you can see lurking under this is that this here is basically some requirement that the polynomials that you're looking at, they satisfy some orthogonality relation on that interval. So you're certainly right in saying that in general, if I just look at any polynomial, they may not have roots that are of interest to us. But it turns out in this case, I actually do a little example right now, all the roots are going to come out real. You could, and of course, the polynomials that you will come by, it's going to depend on your interval. So what you should do is go back and pull out your mathematical physics books and then see what orthogonal functions do I have in the interval from 0 to infinity. What are these zeros and what do they satisfy? It turns out that in this case we're gonna be okay. Let me do a little example, and perhaps it's gonna be.
Sorry.
Yes.
If f of x is of order 2, you can do the integral exactly with basically
for you
n equals 0. An integral.
That would be clean.
Yes.
Let me do an example, and so we're going to crank it out, and you can tell me what we're going to see here, and then I'll. Fortunately, we don't have. So let me do my little example. So my interval from A to B here, it's going to be the interval from minus 1 to 1. Right? Can anybody at this point guess where we're going? Hint, look at a tutorial. So I'm going to do 3 nodes. Again, the points that we're going to be evaluating in, right? So we first want to determine Q of x here. So it has to be of degree, in this case, here we have little n equal to 2. I want to take a degree here, which is 3, right? So I assume that Q of x here, well, it's going to be C0 and then plus C1x plus C2x2 plus C3x3. And then what I require here is that the integral from minus 1 to 1 here of Q of x dx, it's equal to the integral from minus 1 to 1 of x times Q of x dx. That's equal to the integral from minus 1 to 1 of x squared Q of x dx. They're all 0. In other words, it should be orthogonal to, given this integral here, it should be orthogonal to constants, linear functions, and second order polynomials, right? So I can get rid of this one and that one simply by setting C0 equal to C2 equal to 0. So if I do that, then I would have an odd polynomial. And that would mean that this here, that has to be 0. And if I multiply an odd polynomial by an even power, I get another odd polynomial, which is again equal to 0, right? So that means that we're down to saying that Q of x here, it's equal to C1x plus C3x cubed. So we need the integral from minus 1 to 1 of x of c1x plus c3x3 dx. We need that to be equal to 0. But that would mean that 2/3 c1 plus 2 over 5 c5, this is equal to 0, right? C3. I can sort of fix that by setting C1 equal to minus 3 and C3 equal to 5, right? Wouldn't that work? Okay. So in other words, Q of x here is equal to 5x cubed minus 3 times x. And what is that called? Yes, right. So this here would be it's proportional to the P3 of x here. It's 1/2 f of x 3 minus 3x. And so if you remember the orthogonality relation for the Legendre polynomials, there is some factor in there. But basically, what we're saying with the Legendre polynomials is that P of n is going to be orthogonal to Pn minus 1, Pn minus 2 for all n's inferior. So we didn't even have to do this, right? And it's on the interval that we're looking at. We could actually have argued, well, obviously Q of x here, it has to be the Legendre polynomial, right? So we knew this already. So the roots, and what you should go home, and then you should cook up a Gaussian quadrature formula that would be using Bessel functions. Now that would be but there, because the roots are not known explicitly, and but you know how to determine them probably because you've been doing the homework. The roots here, what could they be? Well, it would seem that we would have 0, and then I would have minus root over 5 here, and then 3 over 5. So to answer your question, it turns out that for these Lisandro polynomials, all the roots here are nicely behaved, and they're all real. Yes?
What must be the address of the EC0 and C2?
Just because I want to satisfy this. So, you know, I need, basically here I'm saying that I need to have an odd function. Because the integral from minus 1 to 1 of q of x dx is equal to 0, and that can only be satisfied by an odd function. And that would mean that this and that would have to be equal to 0. And that's, again, if you go and look at the Lisandro polynomials, they have even and odd properties. Right? So we have the roots here, but we're not done yet. Because what we then should do here is, now, and you can see these didn't turn out to be equally spaced, and they're not at the endpoints, right? It's not minus 1, 1, and 0 we're evaluating. It's an oddball points in between, right? Corresponding to the zeros of the third Lisandro polynomials. So what we need to do is we need to determine the AI. So obviously here, the AI, it would have to be the integral from minus 1 to 1 of Li of x dx. But that would mean that I would have to crank out the cardinal functions, which we sort of started doing. So I'm going to take a little shortcut here, and then I'm going to sort of I'm going to determine the AI here by saying that I know that my formula here, it's going to be correct actually up to fifth order polynomials. So why don't we integrate the most constant of all constants? I'll tell you about random numbers shortly. And I always, so it turns out that odd numbers are much more random than even numbers. I'm trying to wake up a little bit. It's called a joke, right? So no, I always ask the entire class to think of a random number, and sort of around 60% will always say an odd number, but it's distinctively more than half, right? And it's our human nature. An odd number it looks more random. I have no idea why I'm talking about this, that's because the constant that's the most constant is 1, right? Two is not as it's not quite as constant as 1. This is right. Anyway. This is not really going anywhere, is it? Right. So I just want to integrate 1, and that I can do. I get 2, and then I go over here and I look at my formula for the integral, and it should be a sum here over the function and evaluated these points, and then multiplied by this. So it should be a0 plus a1 plus a2. Right. The other thing we can, of course, integrate is x dx here. And if we work hard, we can probably figure out that it should be 0. So what is that going to be? Well, I'm going to get A0 again, and I'm going to get A1, and I'm going to get A2. But they're going to be multiplied with the function evaluated in that point. So this would be minus the square root of, what did we say, 3 over 5. And here, plus 0, right? 0 times this, right? And then plus the square root of 3 over 5. And then the last thing we can do is the integral from minus 1 to 1 of x squared dx. Let's all agree that this should be 2/3. And then you can see that I, again, have to do this. Then I have to substitute in the square of the root. So that's just going to give me 3/5 here, A0. And then I'll get 3 over 5, A2. And these, I have now 3 equations with 3 unknowns, so we can solve them. I get A0 is equal to A2, and that's equal to 5 over 9. And A1 here is equal to 8 over 9. And so my final formula here, f of x dx, it's going to be 5 over 9 times f evaluated in minus a square root of 3 over 5, then plus 8 over 9 f of 0, and then plus 5/9 here f of the square root of 3 over 5. Okay, so this was the formula that I was after. And you can see that this starts to look like a bit more thought went into it, because the points are no longer equally spaced. And I have some weights that we determined laboriously. But I claim that this year, this is going to be exact for the degree of f less than or equal to 5. Okay, so here's the trick question. What would happen if we didn't do 3 nodes, but we did 4 nodes? What would q of x be? Yes, it would be the 4th order Legendre polynomials. I sometimes give this as an exercise until somebody enlightened me to the fact that you can just go and pull out Abramovitz and Stegen, and then they have little entries like this. Perimeter can't afford an overhead projector, so you're going to have real good eyesight to see what this is. But it's basically tables given for how many roots you want on the interval from minus 1 to 1. Then they have calculated all these weights and the corresponding roots. And then in sort of no slight feat, on page 919, you can find the formula for 95 points. You can see that probably a bit of work went into that. But it goes further than that, because they have a number of these quadrature formulas on different intervals. For instance, you may be interested in integrating a function of the form from 0 to 1, and then f of x here. But then some nasty guy came along and multiplied by ln of r, or ln of x here. Yes, ln of x dx, right? And then people have, of course, cranked this out and figured out how I can cook up strange quadrature formulas for this. So you have your choice, and it's all been worked out, and you can actually go and look it up. And I'm not gonna say anything more about. And of course, now that we know that the Lestrange polynomials, they come up when we integrate from -1 to 1, you can go and look at your other orthogonal functions, figure out what interval they're defined on. Chebyshev, right? Laguerre. And then you can probably try already. You can already see how you can guess more and more advanced formulas. And they're kind of neat because, again, if you can only allow yourself to evaluate the function in a few points and you want to get the best precision, then looking at some of these quadrature formulas may be a good way to go. And let's go have lunch unless there are questions at this point. So now you know about Gaussian quadrature, which I think is kind of neat, but